Welcome to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour. This is our fun food and drink focused podcast. We are thrilled to be sponsored again by the Ronald McDonald House Charities of San Diego. Their 15th annual Dream House raffle is coming up, and we're actually podcasting from inside the dining room at the Ronald McDonald House here right across the street from Brady Children's Hospital.
While San Diego Magazine staff is handing out and serving the food right now.
Yes, too. We are staffing the place today from soup to nuts, and Chuck Day is going to be with us in a little bit. We're going to hear more about the Dream House raffle and all the good stuff that they have up this year. I'm Erin Chambers-Smith with San Diego Magazine. That's Troy Johnson, our food critic.
Hi.
Funny writer guy.
I loved your rant last week on Big Bear. It was one of my favorite things.
I hope everyone was going, yes.
If you had seen Erin's face, like, it kind of, there's like an eclipse that happened on your face. Like, you know, like fire was coming out of your eyes a little bit.
It wasn't to that level.
No. It was a passionate speech.
It was a passionate speech, yeah. Well, you know what? There's nothing but... So if you missed last week's podcast, Big Bear has atrocious food. We love Big Bear, right?
It's our little ski mountain, close.
Right? You know, skate, yep. Surf, ski, you know, shred bro.
But when you're hungry, it's curly fries and Bud Light.
Oh, it's so bad.
I just think it sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. Why isn't there a Shake Shack at Snow mm-hmm. Summit?
Why
isn't there Grand Ole Barbecue at the Bowling Barn?
I'm telling you, pop-up cultures. There needs to be like one big courtyard, kind of like, you know, the Little Italy Food Hall, the courtyard downtown. Something like a transitory seasonal, like November through March or May or whatever, you open up a little restaurant there.
Why isn't there a choice juicery or a nectar cafe or whatever?
Yeah, because that's what you want, a frozen juice in the middle of the snow.
I would have taken it by Sunday. I would have. I couldn't eat any more curly fries or bad pizza. Okay. And then we have Lauren Wingett with us. How's it going, Lauren?
Oh, all right. Happy to be back.
Great.
Wingett's second episode with us as a new member of the podcast. She totally screwed it up last week, and we invited her back anyway.
Oh, yay. Troy's just lying through his teeth. The whole entry. That's really...
We're just going to run reruns of Archna and call it a day.
No, Wingett has been a seamless addition to our show.
Wingett is amazing.
It's barely a show. We can't even really call it a
show. Wingett is amazing. She does all of our social media, and if you watch her social media, she is covering... I don't know how you have that many hours in the day, but if you haven't checked out San Diego Magazine's Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, whatever, if Instagram especially, she gets interviews, she gets secrets from chefs, she gets places. It is phenomenal right now. It's one of my favorite feeds, and I, like, for the first time, like, well, I'm gonna go check out our magazine's feed. What's going on? Not for the first time, but I mean, I'm really like, oh my god, there's a ton of stuff that I didn't know between issues. It's fantastic.
Thanks. It's really exciting. I was at a Super Bowl party yesterday, and this girl who I'd met a few times came up to me and went, my friends love San Diego Mag's Instagram. It's where they get their dinner recommendations. And I was like, oh, tell me more.
Tell me more. Like, oh, sorry. Let me do my makeup. Hold on.
But no, it's really awesome. I only take what's already built and adapt it for social. So follow along. San Diego Mag is San Diego Mag.
Yeah, and don't follow, by the way.
Hmm.
See, now I'm all ranty. I got to get over it. I got to get happy. But we should do a whole other rant about all the fake San Diego Magazine accounts on Instagram.
Oh, yes.
Oh, there is?
Oh, there's several. They have several thousands of followers, and Instagram doesn't let you do anything about it. Like, there's one that says San-Diego-Mag, and then their tagline says the official Instagram account of San Diego Flipping Magazine.
No.
Yes. Yep. And you can't do anything. You can just go report.
How is that possible? You can't do anything. You can just say, look, from San Diego Magazine, this is a direct, like, copyright, like, bird that they're flipping to us.
But
they're
not posting our content. They're just using that handle to get followers. So it's kind of a gray zone.
That's not a gray zone.
Instagram it is.
It'd be like me if I was like, you know, like, I'm katespade.com, you know, or I'm Jimmy Choo.
Happens.
That's okay. We're going to get happy. We're in the Ronald McDonald House Charities, and we are
fine.
We're right, just telling you about two people 50 bucks. So we're going to survive. We will survive at the magazine, even with the fake Insta. We always start our show with hot plates. This is news around the restaurant scene. Yes, and we will talk to our sponsor coming up in a little bit. That's Chuck Day. We do have a great special guest with us today, Alia Jaziri of Medina, the new restaurant in North Park that's opening in March. And then, let's see, we do have a great hot topic, Wingett. What did you pick for us?
It is it's okay to add surcharges to diners' bills.
I
bet Troy has thoughts on this.
Not illegal.
My stepmom is so angry about this, and I am so happy.
Oh. I think there are thoughts and feels.
So, stepmom, this is for you.
Okay, we will get into all of that. a little bit later in the show. And then we always end with two people, 50 bucks, our own personal recommendations of what we've been eating and drinking. So wing it. Take it away. Tell us what is
new. All right. Fish 101, the gold standard of Lucadia Dining for a while, has a second location that's opened in Cardiff. Owner John Park took over the old Popoleco space, which has a view of the ocean. The menu is similar to their original location. Think West Coast oysters, fish and shrimp tacos, and grilled seafood.
Yeah, and get a tan and a nose job before you go in there.
Well, yeah. Is it like that?
No, I
haven't ever been there.
No, it's, I mean, they do a very good job. And it's not a rip on the actual restaurant itself, but I mean,
you just ripped on North County.
Look, and I grew up surfing in San Diego, so I'm kind of ripping on myself if I were prettier. But it really is just like you walk in there, it's just beautiful surf couples. Like, is it the tan quotient is just massive? And you're like, oh my God, are you a professional surfer? Are you a professional surfer? It's awesome. I mean, it's kind of inspiring. It basically is an 80s movie written about 2019 in San Diego.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Fish 101. We are going to link to all this, by the way, you guys, so don't worry about keeping track of it all. Tell me what Tony Hawk is doing.
All right, yeah. Continuing the North County trend, pro skateboarder Tony Hawk and his son Riley are opening a craft coffee shop in Oceanside called Steel Mill Coffee. The cafe will serve not only coffee from local roaster James Coffee Company, which is taking over the universe, I feel like, it'll also house a retro vinyl record shop. Tony Hawk actually has a passion for coffee. He was one of these first celebrity investors in Blue Bottle, which is coming to One Paseo. Count that down.
Blue Bottle Coffee
Portland?
Blue Bottle is
San Francisco,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Blue Bottle's basically like that catnip for hipsters. I mean, it's a great, great, great
It was coffee. One of the first third wave coffee mm-hmm. roasters in the universe to go mainstream.
Exactly.
Yes,
and
they are amazing.
I know that knowing this with Tony Hawk having been in Blue Bottle and this, they want to get their own roastery going at Steel Mill. You know, I mean, this is going to be the beginning of a big thing for them. This is going to be like their testing grounds, and then they're going to get their feet wet in coffee, doing coffee themselves, and then Tony Hawk is going to help his son develop like a little coffee empire. So I mean, go check it out right now.
Phil's Barbecue is also expanding outside of San Diego for the first time. They'll have a new location in Temecula, and it'll be their fifth restaurant.
Casinos and barbecue. You know, I mean, Temecula.
And some wine.
I don't know if you call it wine.
I know, grape juice.
No, I mean, this is, I mean, look, Temecula still has that, like, very, like, ranch-friendly, kind of, like, old-school Americana feel to it. So I think a barbecue spot up there will do fantastic, and Phil's sauce is really good.
Moving on. Adams Avenue. Sushi. They need sushi. But is that Sabuku place still open up there on Adams?
I think it is.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Anyway, then we're getting a new sushi restaurant on Adams.
David says it is.
Okay.
Adams Avenue is getting its own sushi restaurant, Soichi Kadoya. It has 25 years of experience in Japanese cuisine. He worked at Sushi
Tadakoro.
Thank you. They're really testing me here.
So many syllables.
And it's opening Soichi Sushi in March. It'll have nigiri sushi and hand rolls and both an omasaki and a la carte menu. Omasaki is very popular these days.
Yeah, omasaki.
It's definitely growing.
Yeah, omasaki, there is. I mean, we just, in this month's issue of San Diego Magazine, I reviewed Hidden Fish, which it just has omakase only. So omakase is basically where you walk in and you just say, I'm in your hands, which is literally the translation of omakase. Mm-hmm. You know, and they look at what they have fresh for the day, and they're like, all right, this looks better than that fish, that looks better, because... Look, the seafood, I mean, the ocean is not a predictable producer of food, depending on food supply or the time of the climate, everything else.
Right.
Certain fish are fresher than other fish. You know, that's why it's almost always better to do an omakase at a sushi restaurant, because they're like, all right, I will tell you the six fish I know that look really good right now, and I'm going to serve you that. And Totokoro is a fantastic sushi restaurant in San Diego. So if this guy's pedigree is from there, this should be good.
So with omakase, can you depend on a certain amount of courses, or is that also up to the chef?
Now, this varies. No, you can basically, there are some restaurants that you, like Hidden Fish, you pay $50 for a 12-course tasting. So 12 pieces of sushi, mostly nigiri, which is rice, wasabi, and fish, mm-hmm. and a little bit of like cured sauce and whatnot. But some restaurants will let you just basically say, I'm going to go until I wave the white flag, you know,
okay.
And then they add it up at the end of the time, so...
That's what they did at Ranch and Rodent, is you had to like say stop.
Stop, exactly. Yeah. And you will,
which we didn't want to do because it was amazing.
Yeah, you don't want to say stop until the rice starts expanding in your stomach. You're like, I gotta, yeah, I'm totally fine, keep up. And then like 20 minutes later after the meal, you're just like, oh God.
Yeah, roll me out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is Hot Plates. You guys make sure you check your San Diego magazines because there's a Hot Plates column every month in the print magazine. And then sandiegomagazine.com/SDFoodNews is Troy's blog. And that's where he blogs about the best soup dumplings and the inside look at restaurant families and people that you know. What else are you working on?
Right now I'm working on, I've got a bunch of emails that have just came back about whether or not the design of San Diego restaurants, which is taken off. Like, we are known for the design of our restaurants. I mean, everything in San Diego is artsy and pretty and looks like a restoration hardware.
Better looking than the residents, for sure.
And better, we have some of the best looking restaurants in the world right now. Now, is that a problem, though? Because a lot of people are saying that they're spending so much money on design, so much time, so much effort, and they're not giving any of that love or money to the kitchen, so the food coming out is a warm, hot shrug. You know, so is design overkill? Are we just designing restaurants for Instagram instead of designing restaurants that have amazing kitchens with good cooks?
Right. Or do restaurants have to do that now in order to market themselves?
They have to. You have to have the Instagram wall.
They definitely have to. How do you guys plan your travel? I do it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly.
Interesting. Yeah. I do not yet, but.
It is. I mean, that is how restaurants market themselves.
But like Wrench and Rodent. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about what that place looks like, but everybody loves the food.
Mm-hmm. Everybody
so maybe
does,
the flip works.
Everybody
too.
Does love the food, except for, and they also hired a muralist that they knew to do a wall outside on the alley where everybody takes a photo in front of it. Plus, they've got all this like weird, like, you know, collectibles that they found at garage, you know, sales and everything else in there.
Okay. Interesting. That is it. If you want to read more about that and other stuff, and if you want to give Troy feedback, I know sometimes he's looking for you guys to help, you know, direct him on what he should be doing next. SanDiegoMagazine.com/SDFoodNews. One more thing I'm going to ask you to go look at, and that is our Insiders program. It's sort of like a souped up version of buying a subscription to San Diego Magazine, sdmag.com/insiders. And that's where you can pay $10 a month and you get all kinds of cool benefits. You get your magazine sent to your house every month, just like subscribers do, but you also get a comp happy hour where we host you for a couple of drinks and a couple of appetizers at a new restaurant. We are planning right now a live podcast taping so that you can come watch us tape this podcast. We've done behind the scenes tours of our office, all kinds of fun stuff for our insiders. It's a pretty fun program. So I encourage you all to go to sdmag.com/insiders. Insiders. Okay, we're getting ready to hear from Chuck Day here, the president and CEO of Ronald McDonald House, and make sure you stay tuned because we have Aliyah Jaziri coming up from Medina, a new restaurant in North Park. Okay, you guys, we are thrilled to be sponsored again this week by the Dream House Raffle. That is a benefit to the Ronald McDonald House Charities of San Diego, and we have Chuck Day with us. Thank you so much for joining the podcast and for sponsoring. Tell everyone where we're sitting right now.
We're sitting in the great room of the Ronald McDonald House, and this is the place where we have our meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, served in our commercial kitchen in the back. We also have a family kitchen behind us, and you might notice a bunch of refrigerators back there. All the families who stay with the house can actually use the refrigerators to store their own food and make their own food occasionally. But quite often, with a 19-day stay here, families are looking for a chance to maybe have a break from that. So we serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 125,000 meals in a year.
And that's all to the families of patients that are at Rady Children's Hospital or Sharp Mary Birch?
And any other hospital in San Diego. So we try to support families when they have an inpatient, because that's usually the most trying moment you can think of. And our job is to keep them close to their child so they can provide support to them. And that's the best part of what we do, is keeping families close. Home away from home, try to create a place here with, you know, we've got all kinds of background noise back there, even I can hear, that just really makes you feel like you're at home for a few minutes.
Well, and that's probably, especially when you're going through, a traumatic experience with your child. I mean, my daughter gets a cold and I freak out. You know, I can't imagine something far more serious. But, you know, a place like this, when you're sitting around eating, you know, and you're going through it, the experience, but you're also meeting other families that are going through the experience too. And you get that like ancillary support system. You can sit down, talk about the experience. How are you coping? Everything else.
And our volunteers come in and serve those meals. They get to interact with our families, and then you will see exactly that. You'll see a family come in for the first time, and you can see their eyes glazed over, and someone will help them find out where they're finding their meal, have a seat, and then they'll begin to talk. And then a few days later, they're more comfortable, and they're helping the next new family. It's a great environment for us to kind of provide that support in a way that allows everyone to kind of wrap their arms around these families.
Right, and there's a huge need. Tell me how many meals you guys serve in a year here.
Yeah, about 125,000 meals just out of our little kitchen here, and that's one of the big pieces of news, is we're going to rebuild our kitchen here soon, this summer actually, to expand it, because we, you know, our kitchen was never built for what we've been able to accomplish. And that's one of the things that's going to happen with this Dream House raffle we're doing, the proceeds of which are going to help support what we do.
This is your big annual fundraiser. This is a chance for anyone out in the community to support Ronald McDonald House Charities by buying a raffle ticket. What are the prices this year?
Well, we've got a beautiful Dream House. Our grand prize is in Scripps Ranch. They get to choose. If you get the grand prize, you get to pick from the Dream House raffle a guaranteed annuity of $2.1 million or $1.3 million in cash. That's a guaranteed choice of our grand prize winner, and then there are 1,000 other prizes. And I found one for Troy. I understand he moved recently here in the back. There is a tranquility pod is one of our prizes here for one of our cat on.
You need
somebody told me Troy would know what that thing is, but it's actually we have an add-on drawing too.
He
also
needs the watch.
Yeah, and the new TV.
But we have an add-on drawing. People can get in, and they can win $25,000 or a premium prize, their choice. And then coming up on February 22nd is our early bird deadline, and there is a $100,000 grand prize or a 2019 Porsche Targa 4S or a trip to Asia and Europe by private jet.
And so, and how much are the raffle tickets to buy?
One for $150 or three for $400. Or five for $550, and you can buy more quantities if you'd like. So enter early, enter often, buy add-on tickets. We appreciate it.
And it's sdraffle.com, is that correct?
You've got it, sdraffle.com. We'll teach you exactly how to get those tickets, and we appreciate all the support. San Diego is an amazing community, and we appreciate you all participating.
I'm looking at the dream home right now, and I'm specifically looking at that kitchen. Look at that island. I'm already cooking in it in my mind. You know, I've got my island's about 6.5 inches at my new place. This one's significantly larger.
This is like this is huge. Okay, you guys, very worthy cause here, Ronald McDonald House Charities of San Diego, the 15th annual Dream House Raffle. The date you need to know is February 22nd. That's the early bird deadline, and sdraffle.com is where you go to buy tickets. Thank you so much, Chuck.
And thank you all for coming into the San Diego Ronald McDonald House.
Okay, I'd love to welcome Aliyah Jaziri of Medina, the new restaurant opening here in North Park, as our special guest. Thanks for coming.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, sure. So your menu at Medina is rooted in traditional North African dishes. Aliyah, you grew up with your dad and pure classic ingredients from Baja California. You began as a food truck concept, or Medina began as a food truck concept in San Francisco and then evolved and expanded into farmers markets and pop-ups in San Diego. You finally got your brick and mortar in North Park.
Yes.
Is that all right? Is that your resume?
Yes, it is, more or less. So we are opening, kind of soft opening Medina on El Cajon in Utah, so sort of on the edge of North Park right now. But yeah, basically I started out kind of in law and tech. I went to law school and had a very not traditional restaurant background, I guess, but I was always, you know, like most people who want to open restaurants, really passionate about the food and just that space and why, you know, food brings people together and just kind of that community element. This is always a really big part of my household, basically. So my father is North African, my mom is Indonesian Chinese, so kind of cultural crossroads are really important to me and just a big part of how I grew up. My father was in the restaurant industry, in the food industry, so I kind of just learned to cook through him, and just that, you know, hosting, bringing people together with food was always a big part of something that I loved on a personal level, but in terms of my actual application and career trajectory was completely different. But yeah, I spent about 10 years more or less in San Francisco working in tech for a startup there, and just burnt out a little bit, and I kind of just took a step back and was like, you know what do I really want to do? And just kept on going back to food. And I think because both my parents are small business entrepreneurs, my dad being in the food industry was always like, stay away, like don't do that to yourself.
My dad's a dentist. He came downstairs halfway through my pre-dental program at Chico State, and he's like, I will keep you in school as long as you want, just do not become a dentist, please.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where you know, I looked at them and I was like, oh, this is great. You get to have something, build something that's your own and all that. And they looked at me, you know, working for kind of corporate life in San Francisco, and they're like, that's great.
You got it. You made it.
You made it. You don't have to worry about other people's payroll and this and that. You don't have to worry about taking out the trash, washing dishes or any of that. And
you're like, I want to wash a dish. I don't want to program more code.
Yeah, I'm
like,
You became the dentist. You went into it.
I know. So it's kind of one of those parental things of wanting to, you know, protect your child a little bit. But I think it's something that always was this ongoing nagging thing in the back of my mind. And So yeah, basically I left my job in tech, but still love San Francisco and the community that I built up there. So I applied to this food truck entrepreneur incubator program through Google. Google kind of has their hands in pretty much everything.
Marrying the two lives.
They should go to Big Bear.
Please come to Big Bear. So I thought that was an easy way, you know, being practical as well and also needing to pay San Francisco rent. I was like, this is a good way to still have support and see if this is something that I really want to do, test my ideas, test the processes and learn how to produce at scale, basically, because of course it's different cooking for 15 people in your home and actually serving, you know, 300 covers in like a 3.5 hour period. So that was a good way for me to sort of dip my toe in the water. And right. That was the initial launching pad for Medina, basically. So I applied to the program, got accepted, and did that for a bit, and was able to kind of have, I guess, proof of concept, more or less, for
what Medina. Was it like that first day? I mean, besides knowing that your father is crying somewhere, what was it like that first day you got your food truck, which I know are not cheap? Did you buy your food truck?
No, so actually through this Google program, they basically fund you. And so that was a way for me to not, you know, deplete my life savings and then some. They basically kind of loan you a food truck for the trajectory of the program.
Nice.
They give you, and then they give you, you know, the kind of hands-on experience and everything, and then also you get to, you know, test your recipes in a public environment.
Oh,
rather
my God,
than
you
your
had such a leg up on the food truck
race.
Because honestly, I mean, because some people would be like,
I had to survive in San Francisco. I'm like, I can't just quit and just bleed money. So that was
fantastic.
A good way to try it and see if I really wanted to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
And those people I know that have a food truck, they're like, okay, I just bought this $100,000 thing. Okay,
is it that what it costs?
It's expensive. Yeah,
it's
they
really expensive.
Pull out of the driveway and go, okay, where are we going?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You probably had schematics and code, like figuring out like where you could park, what times of day, optimal traffic.
It was great. It was very practical, not only from a financial perspective, but also just Google had essentially their trade-off is they also wanted to, I mean, they do everything for their Googlers, they call them. They wanted to recreate the night market experience on campus. And so basically they had about a bunch of different food trucks through this program, scattered across their campuses, and then they have, you know, different catering events that we'd participate in and stuff like
so you
that.
You had
so.
Google Campus as one of your first clients?
I mean, I guess. I mean, technically, right. I was a part of Google, so okay. they didn't like All to, right. you know, but yeah, it was a good way to just test things more or less. And you know, speaking to the difficulty of food trucks, it actually made me realize when I moved to San Diego that I didn't want to start with a food truck. And so it was beneficial in that sense, just because food trucks are very difficult and very expensive.
Question for you then,
yes.
which brings up, I've heard that San Diego is a really hard place for food trucks.
It
Why
is,
so?
It is. It's so food trucks, I mean, when they started initially in, you know, Pacific Northwest, LA, Portland, Seattle, New York, obviously, of course, it was an easy way, I think, when, especially during 2008, 2009, the economy wasn't doing very well. Even a couple of my friends were laid off from Charles Schwab and started a food truck in 2009. It was an easy way to do something different. Like, nobody was hiring, and some people had, like, severance packages and things like that. It was a good way to just, you know, live the dream unregulated, more or less.
To piss off your parents, because, yeah.
Yeah, to piss off your parents. You got a little cash in your pocket. Why not, you know? So a lot of them, especially in LA, were, you know, not as heavily regulated as they are now. And I think that even though they do still exist, and at least, you know, the Bay Area, they still do well. It's much more difficult, not only in terms of, you know, finding, because you don't just, like, jump on the truck and, like, okay, now we're going to do service. You have to have a place to land your truck to, you know, dump.
Dispose of trash.
Yeah, all that stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely difficult. But when I moved to San Diego from Medina, I thought about that. But I was like, you know what, there's not, I don't think, a huge food truck scene here. Maybe there's opportunity for it at some point, but I also think that it's so regulated now that it's not as easy to jump into.
And why San Diego? Why San Diego. We're San Diego Magazine.
Yeah.
But why did you choose? And coming from San Francisco, which has a great culinary, rich history, but also maybe a little bit oversaturated and incredibly difficult, if not suicidal, to live in. You know, I mean, you just cannot pay the rent even on the outskirts. But why San Diego?
I chose San Diego because, well, for a couple of reasons. Primary reason, I'd lived in San Francisco for quite some time, even though there's an amazing food scene there and everything. I thought that, you know, it might be a little bit difficult, you know, first starting out, first brick and mortar in a place like San Francisco, which is very, very competitive. And then also, I grew up in San Diego, so I had been in LA and San Francisco for pretty much the better part of 13 years or so, but I grew up in San Diego, and so all my family was here, and I thought it was a good time to kind of come back. My dad had retired from the food industry, so I'm slowly like pulling him back out for help.
Want to pick up a shift?
Exactly. No, my whole family.
I wish your dad was here. I want to interview him.
They've helped me out immensely. I can't thank them enough. But yeah, so basically, I moved to San Diego because San Diego's an amazing place, but my family's here. I grew up here. Also, in terms of the food scene here, I think that it's grown, you know, tremendously, at least when I've come back, you know, for family events and things like that. It's grown
nothing 20 years
so
ago.
Much, you know, especially in the last 5 years that I can kind of put my finger on. So for me, it was exciting to also be a part of that growth. So I think that it made sense. My concept, you know, being a mix of Morocco and Baja and a mix of my culture, half of my cultural heritage, and then growing up in San Diego, Mexican food in Baja California was very much a part of my childhood and growing up, even though it's not a part of, you know, my ethnicity. I've always felt very connected in terms of the food and
what part
culture.
Of San Diego did you grow up in?
I grew up in kind of like Bay Park, Mission Bay area.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Baja is a huge part of our culinary heritage here in San Diego. But I mean, what are we talking about in terms of North African? I mean, I'm picturing like in here a flatbread with like using that instead of a tostada with traditional
So are you talking about, did you say injera?
Yeah,
so that's East African.
Oh, that's East African. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. So North African, a lot of Moroccan flatbreads, we're calling them, but basically it's almost like a puffy pita, I guess, if you can, or puffy pita / naan, and we are kind of using that as a base for some of our tacos. So we make, if you guys know merguez, it's a lamb sausage, spicy lamb sausage that's, you know, was birthed in North Africa. So we make that all in-house. It's fresh and amazing, like old family recipe from my grandmother to my dad and now to me, and we've all put little tweaks on it. Yeah. So, that to me is my personal favorite, our merguez sausage.
Like a non-taco?
Kind of, I would say
It's a gordita.
Yeah, it's really good. We crisp up the bread nicely, and I have the house-made sausage. It's a spicy lamb sausage, a little bit of beef in it too, so the lamb isn't, you know, overpowering. We have a tzatziki crema is what we call it, so it has garlic, you know, yogurt crema, some nice cucumbers, so that kind of offsets the spiciness of the sausage, and so it's a big mix of different flavors and cultures, but for me, I love the colors of the food. I love just they're bold flavors. We have pickled onions, we have spice. It's nice, but also in a kind of modern environment. So I'm very excited about the actual brick and mortar space. We finished just in time for the soft opening with friends and family on Friday, which was amazing and really
did
fun.
Did you really finish?
There's probably a few things. I mean, nothing's ever finished in a restaurant. I mean, I'm like, I have trash cans to buy. I was there this morning and I was like, okay, I gotta buy an outlet for that. I gotta buy this. So it's like, you're never really finished. It's always a labor of love. But it's, I'm really proud of the space as well.
Where in North Park is it?
Yeah, it's 2850 El Cajon Boulevard. So it's on El Cajon Boulevard between, and Utah's the nearest cross street. So
if you know
Barn Brewery, Cafe Madeline. I know they have one in South Park, but there's one up there too. It's close.
David, I swear, I hear you say 2 blocks from your house like every other podcast. It's like David lives 2 blocks from every restaurant in San Diego.
That's what happens when you live on pretty much like Adams and 30th.
I get
2 blocks.
My girlfriend moved here from New York, and she's like, how long will it take me to get there? I'm all, 15 minutes. She's all, how long will it take me to get there? 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15. Everything in San Diego, at least like where I live in Opie, is 15 minutes, just about.
Yeah.
Why North Park area? I mean, obviously there are cheaper areas because North Park is built out a little bit. You know, I mean, where you're at, obviously there's still a little bit of room for growth.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you could have gone to Bar. You could have gone to La Mesa. You could have gone, you know.
I thought of a bunch of different areas, especially because, you know, it's competitive in San Diego because it's growing so much. So it took me a while to find a space that fit my needs because I didn't want to be too big for me as a first time brick and mortar spot. I prefer to outgrow a space, not, you know, get a 200 capacity Juniper and Ivy or whatever, restaurant. Like I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be too in over my head. So I was limited in terms of space and budget and stuff, of course. So, I just decided on that area because I knew that area well. I live not too far from it. So it was easy for me to kind of see the growth of that specific stretch of El Cajon Boulevard over the last couple of years too. So it was an area I was familiar with. And I looked at different spots in Barrio Logan. I looked all over, but that made sense in terms of, you know, size and kind of what I was ultimately looking for.
And obviously you live in the pantry now, but where else do you live? Do you live close?
Yeah, I live close by to the restaurant, yeah.
What is the design like of the space? What's it kind of looking like?
It's great. So it's we're kind of calling it refined counter service or refined fast casual. It's counter service. We have beer and wine. The taps are right in the front. I got this really amazing sort of Moroccan style encaustic cement tile that's lining the bottom of the counter and the top. It's a mix of modern elements. You know, there's concrete and concrete walls. We did like a nice blue acid wash, but also, you know, elements of warmth. More than anything, I want people to feel comfortable in the space and you know, want to come and eat good food and hang out and drink and feel comfortable, you know. So it has a modern vibe to it overall, but elements of warmth and coziness, so you just want to chill for a little.
Now this is a tough question, because I mean, I honestly, if you answer yes, that means that, you know, some people who are servers are going to be offended. But I mean, did you do counter service? Which most people I know who are opening restaurants are doing counter service because they can't afford to staff an entire like full service model with the restaurant margins. Mm-hmm. Is that why?
Yes, that's a good. The biggest reason I would say is that it's difficult in terms of labor, most definitely. Also, the space is small and intimate, so I also don't really feel the need for servers, you know.
Right.
But I think that also kind of the future of a lot of restaurants in the food industry is sort of leading towards that direction. It makes it easier in terms of service, makes it easier on the owner as well in terms of labor. And also people are okay with it now. I think that if you want to have a fine dining experience, there's definitely places for that, and that will always exist. But I think in the majority, if you're, you know, most people are okay with kind of a counter service.
I am absolutely okay with that. I've written about this. I'm like, just because the service industry is dying a little bit, that people are getting rid of servers and they're going towards counter service, it's not necessarily a bad thing, to be quite honest with you. I'm fine going into a restaurant and ordering my food from a counter, taking it to go or take it to my table, you know, having somebody help me like clear plates and glasses and do the bussing and that sort of thing, of course. And once I start bussing my own tables, then I'm really going to start having an issue. But I mean, I'm really fine with it, because I sometimes service gets in the way almost, you know. I mean, it's like I don't want somebody going, how is it? Is it delicious? And I haven't taken a bite yet, you know.
Well, and that leads us to our hot topic. It's very relevant. I guess now a Superior Court judge ruled that it's not illegal, so I guess it's legal, for restaurants to add surcharges to the bill. I guess this was happening all over the country. You've written about it in the national outlets that cover restaurants have written about it. And lots of high-profile restaurants in San Diego started doing it. George's, Mr. A's, the Cone Group, I think, did it. They would add a surcharge. This was more tied to when minimum wage increases were enacted. They would just add a 3% charge on your bill with some kind of language that said, oh, we can't handle it if we don't do this or something. So it kind of speaks to your point that the, you know, the cost of the labor has to come from somewhere. Costs or surcharge.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think... kind of piggybacking on your service statement too, I think customer service is very important. People want to feel warm and welcome, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in a, you know, server at your table experience. I think that, of course, people at the end of the day, you know, and as much as Yelp is a contentious topic for many restaurant owners, people will go and sometimes they're like, yeah, the food was great, but this happened, and they're mad because they felt mistreated. So I think that customer service is always very important, but people are, you know, okay with not having the kind of the face coming in to check in every 6 minutes or so. But I think that I remember in San Francisco, actually, that when they first started doing that, it was the automatic charge, and people were always asking, what is this? What is this? Like, oh, well, this is, you know, kind of giving them the explanation. And when they finally had the explanation in terms of this helps with, you know, health benefits and this and that, because in San Francisco, actually, if you work a certain amount of hours more, even in the restaurant industry or, you know, part-time, you still are required to provide benefits for your employees. So I think that was really difficult for a lot of restaurant owners there. But I think that it's necessary to take care of people who are working very hard. And I think that at the end of the day, even as a restaurant owner, if it's difficult financially, you know, you find ways to make it work. And I think that it's important to take care of the people that are also contributing to the growth and your success and things like that.
Yeah, in the right hands, a service charge is a great way to go, because honestly, in the right hands, what I mean by this is an ethical restaurateur who wants to take care of the people. And most restaurateurs are ethical people. Yeah. You know, they're working hand in hand with those people every single day. You know, nary is the restaurateur who's this overlord who's not never there. You know, there are certain restaurants like that. But, I mean, they're working. These are their friends, their family, everything else. They want to take care of everybody. And, you know, the front service, first old service model is that the tips all go to the server, you know, and they tip out a little bit. It was actually illegal for servers to tip out the bussers for a long time or the kitchen staff or anything like that. You know, with a service charge, you're able to take care of the back of the house. You're able to say, like, hey, dishwasher, we can give you more money, you know, and basically everybody gets paid the same or close to the same. The front of the house is always going to get paid more, which is, you know, it's just a traditional model that way. But it allows, like, good business operators to say, like, hey, this guy is working his butt off in the back, barely making minimum wage. Well, that server makes $45 an hour. You know, we're going to kind of equal that out a little bit more, make sure that everybody's making a living wage. Service charges are fantastic.
Do you think tippers are tipping less? Like, if 20% is the standard, is 15% going to become the standard now? Because now we have a 3% charge.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people are. I mean, look, at the end of the day, everybody's going to even it out. I mean, most people that I know are going to even it out to 20%, period. You know, I mean, that's where I go. I just always do 20% across the board.
Taking into account the service charge or not? That's interesting. Oh, I never thought about that.
No, with the service charge, honestly, no.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely
regardless
not
regardless of that. Yeah. Well, that's the thing I think that's interesting is it's just, I think it's very reflective of the times that everyone's just so much more conscious of what goes into their food. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like this being on your bill, it separates it a little bit out and makes you think about the people that are serving it to you and all that goes into a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Whereas years ago, either food costs, I mean, the price of the dish would have gotten up or the restaurant would have closed or whatever, but it wasn't such a conscious piece of the dining out experience. And it just seems like that is par for the course now, that conscious level of eating out.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the average consumer is, especially in larger cities, is a little bit more connected and educated in terms of all of the moving parts that go into, you know, something showing up in front of you.
We haven't had a service, like a server, on the podcast in a long time. We should have someone come on.
Yeah, for sure. Anybody who's listening out there that's a server, has been for a while, and has a good perspective on what's happening, please reach out to us.
Okay, you guys, we are just about out of time here. Thanks so much to the Ronald McDonald House Charities of San Diego. The 15th annual Dream House Raffle is on. You can go to sdraffle.com to buy a ticket. Thanks so much to Aliyah Jaziri of Medina. I am going to come in and try it.
Thank you. Please do.
Wait, what's my order real quick? I mean, I know you said the merguez. Lamb sausage is fantastic, but I'm going in for the first time. What am I ordering? The one dish.
Okay, I would say the merguez taco, at least one. Okay. Also, the Moroccan spice chicken asado is another taco. We also serve that in a bowl form. So those are kind of our two. The chicken taco is our best seller so far. We also did markets, and they kind of, I get the most positive feedback because people love chicken, which I'm okay with, and it is really good. But yeah, I would say Moroccan spice chicken asado and merguez taco, and you can get that in a taco or a bowl format.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay, we always end our show with two people, $50. Troy, how about you?
Somebody else first.
Okay, how about you? Wing it, $50.
I'm going with Biga this week. It is my lunchtime staple. Their classic sandwich is beyond. They make their own, like, Biga in-house bread, which is basically just like pizza crust that then they smash ingredients into. They make their own cheese in-house. Their charcuterie is amazing. Everything is fresh. It has that quick service mixed with upscale in a really interesting way. I love them, and I love everything they do, and I want to eat there every day.
I wish they would bring back the farro salad. They took it off.
Oh.
It was really good. With the citrus, you could add a piece of tuna.
Well, have you tried their sandwich?
The tuna?
No, the classic sandwich, which I'm waxing poetically about.
I do love Biga. It is very good.
It's really great.
Okay, how about you, Aliyah? Where do you go? Two people, $50 to spend.
I would say, do you guys know Luce's on Marina Boulevard? It's nothing fancy by any means, but it's an awesome little gastro pub neighborhood spot. My parents' house is not too far from there, and it's also family-owned, family-run, and the owner, Sal, is always there, and he's awesome and very sweet and always, like,
they just got a new patio, right?
Yes, they did. Their patio's great, and it's just a great spot. It's always buzzing. There's a good vibe. You feel well taken care of. The food's great. They have specials. Everything's really fresh, and it's just a nice neighborhood spot that's kind of like my go-to for an easy, good meal where you want to feel taken care of and eat something delicious and have some good beer.
Perfect.
Luce, we will link to that. Yeah. Okay, and how about you, Troy? Have you come up with one?
I have come up with one. You know, it's when you're at home, I always look, when I'm my Sunday meal, if I'm working or if I don't want to go out, you know, I mean, I always, you know, look on Postmates. Right, and I'm always looking for a good Penang curry. Penang curry is basically lemongrass and lime leaf and everything else. It's beautiful, like it's like a soup with rice and vegetables and meat and everything else. Yeah, it's a Thai classic, coconut milk. But I mean, I usually do saffron. I do like some of my favorites. I found this random one called the Asian Bistro. The Asian Bistro, which is the most generic name ever. You know, and I'm like, there's no way this is going to be good. But for whatever reason, I was like, all right, let's just give it a shot because who knows? It could be. And if it's awful, I'll just cross it off the list. And I've got this Postmate list that I actually check off.
Oh.
I check off. I'm like, nope, yep, nope, yep. But the Asian Bistro, their Penang curry is fantastic. And their spicy drunken noodles is fantastic, too.
Yeah. Is this one of those Postmates-only restaurants, perhaps?
I have no idea.
I don't think so, because it sounds familiar. It's one of those things that I think I've driven by a million times, but yeah. I've never eaten that. So if I see it at Postmates, now I know to get it. Because Penang curry is my go-to Thai dish.
My favorite thing in the world, yeah. You know, but I was shocked. You know, I mean, I was like, for me, it was better than saffron. It was better than saffron, and it was actually better than Supani.
Really?
Supani, which I love Supani. Supani is one of the best Thai restaurants in San Diego, and theirs was better.
Wow.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Check it out.
David is dubious. Okay, you guys, thanks so much for listening. This has been the Happy Half Hour. We're going to link to everything that we talked about today. Everyone go try Medina. Go to sdraffle.com.
Merguez Tacos.